Tim, and good morning again. So it was just a little over 2 weeks ago, I had the pleasure of attending the sight and sound presentation of Joshua down in Lancaster. And I know some of the other people here were also able to do that. And it was very interesting, makes you think about a lot of things. And sometimes you had to go back to the scriptures and look them up and said, was that really in the Bible? Well, sometimes it really wasn't. They added a few things to it to make it a show. But anyway, so one of the things, though, that made an impression on me from that presentation was Joshua's desire to possess the promised land. Portrayed Joshua as really, his whole life and goal was to enter that promised land, and it was going to be fabulous, and God was going to give it to them, and that made an impression on me. He really believed, as it was portrayed there, that God was going to give them that wonderful land. So that vision gave him hope. It gave him a goal that drove him to be the man that he was. But today I want to focus in on Joshua. I wish I would have read a little bit more about Joshua before I went to the play. Having that background would have really helped me to enjoy the play more. And it's been a while since I read Joshua, so I was kind of like, well, I don't know. I don't remember hearing some of that stuff before. But anyway, so I want to focus on Joshua. Who was he? What was he really like? What did he accomplish? And how does his example apply to us? And as we focus on Joshua and some of the incidents with him, we will learn a little bit more about God, because he had a lot of interaction with God. So we can learn about God as we look at the life of Joshua. So first, who was Joshua? Numbers chapter 11 tells us who he was. You don't have to turn to all of these, but I could have picked a couple of other places. Numbers chapter 11, verse 28, it says, "So Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, one of his choice men," and then it goes on and explains some other things, but who he was the son of Nun. We don't know anything else about Nun. He was, his only claim to fame is he was the father of Joshua, okay? I couldn't find anything else about Nun in the Bible, okay? So, they were of descendants of Joseph, okay, if that matters. He was Moses' assistant. That's interesting. He was Moses' assistant pretty much the whole way from when Moses took Israel through the Red Sea till the time Moses died. And that was over 40 years. So he was very loyal. He was content to be the assistant. And it says he was one of Moses' choice men. What that means is probably one of the men that he could use and know that he would get things done correctly. A person that he admired and trusted. Okay. Now, as you read this little story, it says, "He answered and said, Moses, my Lord forbid them." Now, the story here is the Holy Spirit had come down on a couple of people in the congregation, and they started speaking because they were inspired by the Spirit. And Joshua, very loyal to Moses, thought this was an affront to Moses. But Moses rebuked him. Moses said to him, "Are you zealous for my sake? Oh, that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Lord would put his Spirit upon them." End of the story. Okay. Joshua was a little overzealous in his loyalty, but he probably learned from that experience. He and Moses got along fine after that. So he didn't take the rebuke as a put down for him personally. It's just he was just training him. So actually, okay, let's go to Exodus chapter 17. Exodus 17. Actually, this is the first mention of Joshua in the Bible. Exodus chapter 17, verse 8 through 14. Now, Amalek, who was one of the Canaanites, this was after they had crossed the Red Sea, before they received the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai. So it was in the first month or two that they had come out of slavery. Okay. Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephaim. And Moses said to Joshua, "Choose us some men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand at the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand." So Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went to the top of the hill. And so it was, when Moses held up his hand, Israel prevailed. And when he let his hand down, Amalek prevailed. But when Moses' hands became heavy, they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on the one side and the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. So it was actually God who gave them the victory. Joshua just happened to be the person leading the army. And so he was a leader. We see here that he was a leader. He was also someone who wasn't afraid to fight when God told him to fight. And the people of Amalek were very evil, as they're mentioned other places in the Bible, and they just weren't a good people. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this for memorial in the book and recount it in the hearing of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven." So God specifically wanted Joshua to know that what God's will towards Amalek was. "I will utterly blot out the remembrance." So God was definitely preparing Joshua for something in the future. And the nation of Israel would have to deal with Amalek in the future. Okay, so Exodus chapter 24. Next time Joshua is actually mentioned, Exodus chapter 24. Now this is after the giving of the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai. So Joshua would have been there at the giving of the Ten Commandments. He would have seen the great event happen and the booming voice that boomed out the Ten Commandments. He would have seen that. But this is after that. In verse 12, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Come up to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you tablets of stone and the law and commandments which I have written, that you may teach them.' So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up to the mountain of God. So it's, you know, this was a great event where God was going to write these commandments on the tables of stone. The Ten Commandments, as in other places points out, it was Ten Commandments. And Joshua had the privilege of being Moses' assistant again. It says he was an assistant, and he went with Moses. Now, did he go to the top of the mountain? It doesn't say. It doesn't say specifically that he went to the top of the mountain. But who was with Moses when he came down from the mountain? Well, it tells us that over in Exodus chapter 32, I think it was. Exodus chapter 32, verse 15. And Moses turned and went down from the mountain, and the two tables of the testimony were in his hand. The tablets were written on both sides, the one on the one side and on the other they were written. And the tablets were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God engraved. And when Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, "There's noise of war in the camp." So Joshua was with Moses when they came down from the mountain. Joshua was not in the camp when they made the golden calf. He did not have a part of that. And he was just as shocked at the noise that and the goings on in the camp as Moses was. So Joshua was with Moses when he came down. Whether he was with him, the whole time, we don't know for sure. It almost seems like he was. Now, chapter 33, verse 11. So the Lord spoke to Moses face to face, as a man speaks to his friend, and he would return to the camp. But his servant, this was at the tabernacle. But his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, did not depart from the tabernacle. So Moses set up a tent. It was outside of the camp, a ways outside of the camp. And he would go there, and a pillar of cloud would come over this tent, and God would converse with Moses there. But it seems like Joshua was at this tent also. And actually it says here, Moses went back into the camp, but Joshua stayed at the tent. It's kind of like his responsibility was to kind of take care of things at the tent. At least that was his responsibility at that time. So that was interesting. He would have heard God talking to Moses. What a privilege this man had to be a part of all these great events, a witness to all these great events. So it helps you see why Joshua was the man that he was and why God could use him the way he did and how they finally accomplished getting into the promised land with his leadership. So going back to verse 1 of chapter 33, verse 1, here again, a lot of conversations are recorded in this book of God talking to Moses, okay, at this time especially. And this is one of them. And then the Lord said to Moses, "Depart and go up from here, you and the people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt, to the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, 'To your descendants I will give it, and I will send my angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanite and the Amorite and the Hittite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite. Go up to a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in your midst, lest I consume you on the way, for you are a stiff-necked people.'" So there's a lot in those couple of verses there. But here is one more time God promising the promised land, and he's telling them to go into the promised land. Take it. I promise it to you. It's a land of milk and honey, flowing with milk and honey. And that this promise is mentioned in Exodus chapter 3, verse 8. It's mentioned in Exodus chapter 3, verse 17. And Exodus 13, verse 5, same promise, the same promised land, a land flowing with milk and honey. So Joshua would have been very aware of all those times that it was promised. And it was something that I'm sure the promised land promise was very foremost in his mind. It was foremost in Moses' mind. It was foremost in God's mind, as this was the next step, guys. This is where I want you to be. I'm giving it to you because I love you, and it's going to be great, and I will make it happen. I'll send the angel before me. So notice the one that made the promise was God. It wasn't Moses making this promise. It was God. It wasn't a human being making the promise. So anyway, that sometimes, it's sounds easier than it is. Okay, so sometime after this, maybe the following year, God instructed Moses again, and this is over in Numbers chapter 13. Numbers chapter 13. Now, the promised land was away. I don't know how far it would have been. It wasn't really that far, but a few days' journey from Sinai. And in Numbers chapter 13, this might not have been that long after he told him to take the land. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Send men to spy out the land of Canaan," which the word spy also could mean search out or look it over, you know, the land of Canaan, "which I am giving to the children of Israel. Now from each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, even one leader, everyone a leader among them." So Moses was to pick one man from each tribe, and each one of these men was to be a leader. And then verse 8. "From the tribe of Ephraim," which would have been the son of Joseph, Hoshua, the son of Nun. Who's Hoshua, the son of Nun? I thought it was Joshua, the son of Nun. Verse 16. "These are the names of the men whom Moses sent to search out the land. And Moses called Hoshua, the son of Nun, Joshua." So his name, Moses changed his name to Joshua at this point. It's kind of interesting that he changed his name. The word Hoshua means salvation, but Joshua means the Lord saves. The Lord saves. He's the one who saves. So it indicates, at least to me, Moses' esteem for Joshua to kind of change his name. It's kind of like Jesus for Peter. It's kind of rare in scriptures that people's name is changed. Usually it has a meaning, special meaning in God's eyes, and it was a special thing. So anyway, he had the privilege of having his name changed. Anyway, they were to investigate what the land was like. Verse 17, "Then Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, 'Go up this way into the south and into the mountains and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps, or are they more like strongholds? Whether the land is rich or poor, whether there's forest there or not, be of good courage and bring some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So this they did. They went up into the land and just kind of looked it over, see what they could see. And they brought back a cluster of grapes, and it required two men with a pole to carry that cluster of grapes. The grapes were, the bunch was so big, and the grapes were so huge, it was quite a indication of the fruit of the land, how abundant and wonderful it was. So it was very fruitful, and it did flow with milk and honey. But the cities were large and fortified. The people appeared to be strong. There were some giants in the land. And because of those things, 10 of the 12 men who were sent said it would be too dangerous to try to take the land. Too dangerous. And they convinced the people that it would be too dangerous. But Joshua and Caleb had a different opinion, and that's in chapter 14, verse 6. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who spied out the land, tore their clothes. They were really upset. And they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, "The land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. So Joshua and Caleb did what was right. They tried. They really tried to convince the people. They told them, you know, that. I mean, I'm sure they probably reminded the people of all the things God had done for them. God provided manna every night and quail, and it was like a cloud during the day and a sun during the night. And, it, you know, they still feared. They still feared. Their majority opinion won. They did not go into the promised land at that time. So you read the account, Moses and Aaron were really upset. God was really upset. He was angry. God was really angry. They had rejected him and what he had wanted to do. They did not have faith in God. So because of that, God said they would wander in the wilderness for 40 years. So until all of that generation had died except for Caleb and Joshua, all of that generation would die, and the next generation would then be allowed to go into the land. So Moses goes up onto a mountain where he can view the land. Moses himself would not be allowed to enter the land. And we pick up the story over in Numbers chapter 27, verse 15. Numbers 27, 15. Then Moses spoke to the Lord, saying, "Let the Lord, the God of," this is when he was up on the mountain, "the God of the spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation, who may go out before them and go in before them, who may lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord may not be like sheep which have no shepherd." So Moses was very concerned about having a leader who could lead them. If he wasn't going to be able to go into the land, the people were going to need a leader to lead them into the land and to lead them in the way to go. And the Lord said to Moses, "Take Joshua, the son of Nun, with you, a man in whom is the Spirit." He had God's Spirit. That's what made a big difference in Joshua. He had the Spirit. "And lay your hands on him and set him before Eleazar the priest, the high priest, and before all the congregation, and inaugurate him in their sight. And you shall give him some of your authority, and let all the congregation of the children of Israel may be obedient, that he may stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire before the Lord for him by the judgment of the Urim. And at his word they shall go out, and at his word they shall come in. He and all the children of Israel with him, all the congregation." And Moses did as the Lord commanded him. He took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation, and he laid his hands on him and inaugurated him, just as the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses. When it says inaugurated him, it's like he commissioned him. He put this responsibility upon him. And notice who picked Joshua. Moses didn't pick Joshua. God picked Joshua. God said, appoint Joshua, and he would be the leader. And the people were to obey him. And he, you know, so God had a lot of confidence in Joshua. He would be like a shepherd. He would be like a shepherd, shepherding sheep. And because people needed a shepherd. And the people were to respect him. So what was one of the primary things that Joshua would need to do? Over in Deuteronomy. Go over to Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 37. Tells us about that. Deuteronomy chapter 1, 37. "The Lord was also angry with me for your sake, saying, 'Even you shall not go in there. Joshua, the son of Nun, who stands before you, he shall go in there. Encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit it.'" So his primary job was going to be to get Israel to inherit, take the inheritance that God was giving them. And it was the promised land. He would lead Israel to inherit the promised land. So what does God say here, though, that Joshua would need? He says he would need encouragement. Encouragement, because Joshua is human. He's human just like everyone else that's human. They can be deceived. They can have weaknesses. There will be trials. There was going to be lots of trials. And things are not always going to look the brightest. So he needs encouragement. That's really what he needs. The leaders need encouragement. They're not superhuman. Okay, so what does Moses do? Chapter 3, verse 21. Chapter 3, verse 21. "And I commanded Joshua at that time, saying, 'Your eyes have seen all that the Lord your God has done to these two kings. So will the Lord do to all the kingdoms through which you pass. You must not fear them, for the Lord your God himself fights for you.'" These are encouraging words that God inspired Moses to give Joshua. points out about the two kings. They talked about those two kings in the little song that we did here as for the special music. They were mentioned, and those were two kings that were on the east side of the Jordan that they had already conquered. And you can read the story of that here in the Bible. Specifically, was one of them was King Sihon, the kingdom of Heshbon. I think that was the Amorites. And the other was King Og, and that was the kingdom of Bashan. And God delivered miraculously both of those kings and all of their cities into the hand of the Israelites. So Moses is encouraging Joshua, says, you saw what God does to those two kings? He'll do that to the kings in these cities on the other side of the Jordan. There was even giants, I think, in some of the cities that they had already conquered. And the Lord fights for you. The Lord fights for you. And the Lord will deliver the cities on the other side. Verse 28. But command Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him, for he shall go over before this people, and he shall cause them to inherit the land which you will see. So once again, he tells them to encourage Joshua, and it also says strengthen him. Strengthen him. It adds that in that verse. So that was what Moses was to do. Even though he wouldn't be able to come in, he still had a job to do before he died, and that was to encourage Joshua. So we can look at this as we are also looking forward to a promised land, a kingdom that is much better than the physical promised land that they were looking forward to. We're looking forward to a spiritual world, a world in which righteousness dwells, a world where God will live. We look forward to that. And Ephesians chapter 3, verse 16, Paul is saying to the people, strengthen the other people through his spirit. He gives us his spirit to strengthen us. And in Luke chapter 22, verse 32, Jesus Christ said, strengthen your brethren. That's part of the job, each one of us, to strengthen your brethren. So we need to help encourage each other so that we can obtain the kingdom that we're looking for. We're attaining the promised land that we are looking forward to. So this is all pointing us toward a better kingdom that we look forward to. Okay, so in Deuteronomy chapter 31 and verse 1, this is a speech that Moses gave before he died, over in Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 1. And Moses went and spoke these words to all Israel, and he said to them, I am 120 years old today. I can no longer go out and come in. You get old, and your body just doesn't go anymore. And he made it to 120. Also, the Lord has said to me, you shall not cross over this Jordan. The Lord your God himself crosses over before you. He will destroy those nations from before you, and you shall dispossess them. Joshua himself crosses over before you, just as the Lord has said, and the Lord will do to them just as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and their land, which he destroyed them. The Lord will give them over to you, that you may do to them according to every commandment which I have commanded you. Be strong and of good courage. Do not fear nor be afraid of them. For the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you, and he will not leave you nor forsake you. So Moses gave the speech to all Israel, and he instructed Joshua. I'm going to keep your place here in Deuteronomy. I just want to look at Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5, talking to Christians, kind of referring back to these events. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5. Says, let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me? So, you know, just the same words that Moses was encouraging Joshua, the Lord will, and actually that's where this comes from, I will never leave you nor forsake you. It's God's promise to Joshua. It's God's promise to us. And the Lord is our helper, just as he was Joshua's helper. So, relevant scripture to us. Now back to Deuteronomy 31, verse 14. Then the Lord said to Moses, behold, the days approach when you must die. Call Joshua and present yourselves in the tabernacle of meeting, that I may inaugurate him or commission him. So they actually had a ceremony where they kind of passed the power over to Joshua, the leadership. So Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tabernacle of meeting, and the Lord appeared at the tabernacle in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood above the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord was a part of it. In verse 23, then he inaugurated Joshua, the son of Nun, and said, be strong and of good courage, for you shall bring the children of Israel into the land which I swore to them, and I will be with you. So that was his job, to bring them in the land. But, you know, it's easier, like I said, it's easier said than done. There was going to be lots of trials, but you have to remember God is going to be with you. And you have to remember to be strong and of good courage. You have to have courage, and you have to be strong, and you need as much of God's spirit as you can have, so you have that strength. So soon thereafter, Moses died. And in chapter 34, verse 9 of Deuteronomy. Okay, this was Moses had died. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him. So the children of Israel heeded him and did as the Lord had commanded Moses. So he was full of, this key thing, he was full of the Spirit, and it was a spirit of wisdom as well as a spirit of other things, I'm sure. And the people heeded him and did as they were instructed. And things went well. Things went well. At least for a while. So I've given you the history of Joshua, and so far I've recounted the history of Joshua, and we haven't even gotten to the book of Joshua. All of this history of Joshua is in other books prior to the book of Joshua. The book of Joshua, the main character is Joshua. He is the main character in that book. And you can read that book and learn about a lot of the trials that he faced and how God helped him. Basically, it was through God's help that they were able to succeed in taking the land. Humanly, the task ahead of him looked very difficult. There were walled cities, there were giants. The people weren't just going to lie down and let them have it, you know. They were going to fight. So how does it turn out for Joshua? So I don't have a time to read the book of Joshua today, but I'm going to give you a couple of highlights. Joshua 1, verses 1 through 9. I'm going to start there at the beginning of the book of Joshua. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun. So God spoke to him, just like he spoke to Moses. Moses' assistant points out here again, he was an assistant. For over 40 years, he was an assistant, and he was content to be the assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your feet would tread upon, I have given you. As I said to Moses, eat from the wilderness and this Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites and to the great sea, the Mediterranean Sea, toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. But this book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. So that was God's speech to Joshua. I'm sure that should have been very encouraging to him. He had repeated so many of the things he had told him through Moses, so many of the principles of what was going to make it a success. And it's quite a promise, quite a blessing. And notice that he emphasizes following God's law, meditating on God's law, observing it, doing it, practicing it. So, right away, Joshua takes charge. He says to the people, get ready, in 3 days, we will cross the Jordan. So, 2.5 tribes of the 12 tribes would inherit the land on the east side of the Jordan River. So, they had already conquered that land, so their tribes would inhabit that area. But their men needed to help the other men to take the land on the west side of the Jordan. Okay, so verse 16 of chapter 1. So Joshua told the people what he wanted. So they answered Joshua, saying, "All that you command us, we will do. And wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we heeded Moses in all things, so will we heed you." Okay, so that was their attitude. That was wonderful. Hopefully they followed through with that. Joshua couldn't have asked for a better response from the people. But just getting across the Jordan River was going to be a real challenge because it was in the spring, and at that time of the year, the Jordan River was high and swift from all the melting snow in the north. And the time of the year when they had rainfall, and it really wasn't that easy to cross the Jordan River, especially when you had families of elderly people, young children, babies, you had handicapped people. How were you going to get across the Jordan River? So right away, they had a trial. But God told Joshua what to do. The priests would carry the Ark of the Covenant. He was very specific what they would do. The priests were to take the Ark of the Covenant and lead. They would lead. The people would follow with a space of about 2,000 cubits behind. And it appears that was about a half a mile behind. That's quite a distance. The priests were going to take the leadership, and they were going to go first. Okay, in Joshua 3, verse 5. "And Joshua said to the people, 'Sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you.' Then Joshua spoke to the priests, saying, 'Take up the Ark of the Covenant and cross over before the people.'" So Joshua was very confident that a great miracle was going to happen. They were going to, how were the priests going to cross the Jordan carrying this ark when the water was high and running very swiftly? How was that going to happen? God was going to perform a miracle for them, and God would do it just like he said he would. In verse 14, "So it was, when the people set out from their camp to cross over the Jordan, with the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as those who bore the Ark came to the Jordan, and the feet of the priests who bore the Ark dipped in the edge of the water, for the Jordan overflows all the banks during the whole time of the harvest, that the waters which came down from upstream stood still and rose in a heap very far away at a place called Adam, which was miles away, the city that is beside Zartan. The waters that went down into the sea of the Arabah, or the Salt Sea, failed and were cut off. And the people crossed over opposite Jericho. And the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all Israel crossed over on dry ground until all the people had crossed completely over the Jordan." A great miracle, just like the miracle of going through the Red Sea coming out of Egypt. God performed a great miracle again so that they could get across the Jordan River. And all the people were able to cross on dry land. So it was fantastic. It was, I'm sure, awe-inspiring, and the people were very inspired by what had happened. There's a start of going into the promised land. They made it across the river. So the book of Joshua tells us the story of how they conquered the land of Canaan and how they divided the land after they conquered it, which tribes got what areas. All that's in the book of Joshua. Years went by, and Joshua himself became an old man. And I think it's interesting to see what his perspective was at the end. Joshua chapter 23, Joshua 23 and verse 1. It came to pass a long time after the Lord had given rest to Israel from all their enemies round about, that Joshua was old, advanced in years. And Joshua called for all Israel, for their elders, for their heads, for their judges, and for their officers, and said to them, I am old, advanced in age. You have seen all that the Lord your God has done to all those nations because of you. For the Lord your God is he who fought for you. See, I have divided to you by lot these nations that remain to be an inheritance for your tribes from the Jordan, with all the nations I've cut off as far as the great sea westward. And the Lord your God will expel them from before you and drive them out of your sight. So you shall possess the land as the Lord promised you. Therefore, be courageous to keep and do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, lest you turn aside to the right hand or to the left, and lest you go among these nations who remain among you. You shall not make mention of the name of their gods, nor cause anyone to swear by them, nor shall you serve them or bow down to them. But you shall hold fast to the Lord your God, as you have done this day. For the Lord has driven out from before you great and strong nations, but as for you, no one has been able to stand against you to this day. One man of you shall chase 1,000, for the Lord your God is he who fights for you, as he promised you. Therefore, take careful heed to yourselves that you love the Lord your God, or else if indeed you do go back and cling to the remnant of these nations, those that remain among you, and make marriage with them, and go into them, and they to you, know for certain that the Lord your God will no longer drive out these nations from before you, but they will be snares and traps to you, and scourges on your side, and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from the good land which the Lord your God has given you. So he gives God the credit for their success, but he cautions them that they need to keep God's law, that they don't need to, that they should not worship other gods. Be careful not to worship other gods or to make other gods or have other gods. Hold fast to the true God. Hold fast. Be careful that you love him, he says. Be careful. That's something you have to be careful about, that you love him. You should not marry from the Canaanite nation. The partners will be snares and traps and scourges in your side and thorns in your eyes. I don't know how that works, but it doesn't sound very good. And if you do that, things will not go well. Eventually, you will perish. So God can bring about good for you, but you need to choose what is good and not choose the bad. So chapter 24, verse 31. 24:31. Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had known all the works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. So Joshua was a success. The people served God while he was the leader, and even served the leaders that he had probably trained, the elders that were still alive when he died. So his legacy was he was a very good leader, and God blessed him because he obeyed God. And God blessed him with just so many positive experiences that he, you think of all the positive experiences he lived through, and it's amazing. But he was faithful. He set an example for us. He was a man of faith in God. He did have a strong desire for the physical promised land, but I don't know if that was his whole motivation. He had God's spirit, and he trusted God. He wanted to obey God. Those things drove him just as much as maybe having a nice land to live in. But he persevered, and with God's help, he did obtain his goal. So we look forward to an eternal promised land, a resurrection, a spiritual world of righteousness, and God can help us just like he helped Joshua. And he desires that we all would have the character of Joshua.